in the pediatric space, while there are, of course, competitive forces like in any other space, there is a lot more collaboration because we understand that the challenges cannot be really solved in isolation. And there are several efforts amongst children's hospitals that are coming together.
This is Tectonics, the podcast focused on the people and passion at the intersection of technology and health.
While determining what to do with college and her career, Jessica Rousset struggled to decide. Go with the right brain and be an artist, or go with the left brain and pursue engineering? In a way, she's managed to do both, though her current canvas is companies and her palette is the health needs of children.
This is Tectonics. I'm David Chewitz.
And I'm Lisa Soonan, and today's episode is brought to you by HealthXL, a global enterprise that empowers leading organizations and innovators to solve major healthcare problems through digital health collaborations. So, David, it'll be interesting today. We haven't really had a show focused on the pediatric side of the world. And I think it's kind of interesting how little attention it gets, really. It's sad in some ways. I mean, people tend to forget that the kids of today are the adults of tomorrow.
But not only that, one of the things that they always emphasize, and I remember from my pediatrics rotation, is people would say, you know, kids are not just mini adults.
Right.
You have to think of, you know, the physiology, everything about them is so distinct and so different. And this actually came up at the recent Moonshot summit, where a mother of a pediatric of a child with cancer was describing how the lack of innovation for pediatric cancers in particular, and how hard it is, and how disappointing it was for her that the research is not as advanced as you'd like it to be.
Well, and the business community isn't a big fan either, because the markets are perceived as small and difficult to penetrate. So it'll be great to talk to Jessica today, who is the director of the Center for Innovation at Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. Jessica was born in Europe, and the true French tradition was drawn to dance and art. And yet when it came time for college, her practical side got the best of her. Jessica got a degree in biomedical engineering and launched her career as a pharmaceutical research assistant, coming to see herself as a hardcore scientist, as she has put it. So Jessica, thanks for coming today. People tend to think of art and science as fundamentally different, but both rely on creativity for success. In fact, of course, there are many scientists also famous for their artistic skills, like Da Vinci and Albert Schweitzer, and even actress Hedy Lamarr. And by the way, Brian May of Queen is an astrophysicist, for those of you who did not know that. But how does this convergence help you conceive of and create companies to serve the children you care about? How do you think the fields of art and science are similar and different, Jessica?
So there's, as you mentioned, just a lot of challenges in innovating in this space, including the small markets and just the vulnerabilities of the patient population that one has to experiment with in order to advance new products and services. So I think where we need to, necessity is the mother of invention, and really there are a lot of constraints in this particular field that require us to be creative. I think creativity is really at the heart of advancing this field. And so I think that is why it appeals strongly to me, even though I did pursue a more scientific, experience in my life. My creativity is certainly tapped and challenged while in finding solutions for pediatric care.
So you started out on the bench studying vaccines, and today you're helping create startups at a health system focused on kids. How did you get from the science side to the business side?
Yes, the world of translational medicine. We work here at Children's LA very closely with PhD scientists, basic researchers, and sometimes they're very much focused on what's happening in the in vitro world or in animals. And so a big part of our function actually at the Center for Innovation is to make sure that there is a bridge between the research happening at the lab level and the patients that we see literally across the street here on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles at the hospital. And going obviously from those animal experiments to first in human is really what we want to accomplish. And there's a lot of education that has to happen in terms of, PhD scientists understanding what is necessary to advance their discoveries and move them to the clinic. And we, an academic medical center obviously also has a lot of the infrastructure in order to support that kind of translational research and moving these ideas to the clinic. It takes a long time, and certainly it's a it takes money, and so that's the other big part of what we do is looking for sources of funding to make that happen. Within, of course, the regulatory constraints.
What about for you personally? I mean, you were on the bench studying, doing research, and somebody plucked you out of there and said you'd be great at marketing. I remember you telling me that that was somewhat offensive that somebody would tell you you should, instead of being a hardcore scientist, be in marketing or business.
Yeah. I was very fortunate in the early phases of my career to work at GlaxoSmithKline, where I started off, as you mentioned, kind of in the lab. And because they saw this other side in terms of my talents, I suppose.
Your ability to talk to other humans, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. So I was able to be exposed to a lot of different aspects of the business, right? And when you kind of train, I think when you go to school as a scientist, you imagine your career going in a very narrow direction. And then when you enter into the workplace, you see that there are just so many facets that require scientific understanding and knowledge of bringing a product to market. So I was able to do some business development, strategic planning, as well as clinical development. So I could really see a good 360 of all of what it took. And once I got that bird's eye view of it, there was no turning back, really.
Well, so it sounds like you were really excited by what you almost might call the intellectual challenges that you saw on the business and scientific side. Do you remember a particular type of project that really captured your interest or excitement?
Well, truthfully, my passion for this really kicked in 10 years ago when I joined Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and I really started to understand the world of pediatric care. And then I had two kids of my own, and I think then it just took it to a whole other level. So we work on many, many projects here that really could transform standards in pediatric care. One example I'll just give you is a fetal pacemaker, which a very unique group of fetal surgeons and pediatric cardiologists and biomedical engineers. We brought this team together. They came up with this design and were, on the verge of potentially pacing the very first fetus that otherwise would die. So you have these extraordinarily exciting technologies and products. It's hard not to get excited about them, but the challenges are these are, maybe 600 fetuses in the world that would benefit from this technology. So very small markets. How do you finance that, and how do you start a self-sustaining company that will, that will support putting such a product on the market?
Are most of your efforts around this sort of narrow, super high-tech type of interventions? Because the other thing you hear about is the epidemic of childhood obesity, these sort of large population level problems that people wonder, is there a technologically, can you gamify something? Is there some way you could bring in technology? I mean, I've seen this, kids start to use technology, start to use iPads from the age of one, two, in utero almost. Well, maybe someone that I use, maybe someone in California, in LA is working on that. But given how kids gravitate towards technology and given the population health needs of children, are you working on bringing those two together?
Yeah, so most definitely. And there really are the two ends of the spectrum. And the previous example would be certainly one, very much the extreme of the high tech and very kind of, niche patient population that we're trying to affect. On the other end of the spectrum, there are, certainly 3 million children here in Los Angeles that we, care for. There is a big focus, and as Lisa mentioned, we're a member of Health Excel. So digital health and understanding how we can harness the potential of all of these technologies to affect the wellness and outcomes of larger numbers of patients is certainly at the core of what we do as well. I would say it's for us somewhat of a newer area that we're, trying to develop our strategies around. And at the same time, we want to affect, you know, change for the 3 million patients' pediatric lives here in LA. But because we always have a commercialization kind of focus, we're also looking to scale whatever solutions we're able to bring forward locally, to the country and beyond.
You know, I think it's so interesting to talk to you and others about this field because there's this tension between it being a business and a calling.
Yeah.
You know, I think, does it have to be both? I mean, does it have to really have a social aspect to it and a social funding aspect to it to be successful? Or can you really create businesses that can scale enough to make them interesting from an investor standpoint?
Mm-hmm. This is a topic that I've been grappling with, obviously, for 10 years that I've been here, and I've certainly convinced myself that for certain opportunities, there are some just purely financial, financial gains that they could attract a traditional investor. We've been running an accelerator for the past 2 years, funded by the FDA, one of seven in the country, where we look at technologies that innovators are developing, whether startups or in academia, that could affect, pediatric care. So we've been doing a lot of due diligence, essentially, in this space. And there are, for sure, companies that are targeting rare conditions in children, but that have such a value proposition that really they're they offer some very significant potential ROI. So I do not think that this has to combine kind of the social return and the financial return. However, these are new areas, and for most of these investors, it's just a different kind of story. And I think we need one or two successes to kind of pave the way, and I certainly hope to be a part of driving those successes into reality. Orphan drugs have had successes, and that's certainly benefited the pediatric space. I think for devices, we're going to start seeing the same thing with potentially curative devices.
You just referred to your program, the Consortium for Technology and Innovation in Pediatrics, the FDA-funded medical device incubator, I think. Can you talk about that a little bit more? And are the large medical device companies, the Medtronics and Strikers of the world, are they interested in playing in that space?
Well, that's the ultimate game plan for us. I think we need to have some successes, right, and some early successes. We're 2.5 years into this grant. It's a 5-year grant. Ultimately, our goal is to start educating and informing the larger players about the exciting portfolios that we're incubating, and to get some strategic partnerships going. Product development obviously takes time, and getting the compelling data and putting kind of the business propositions around them take some time, but I think we're getting there, and that's definitely the next phase for us, and probably a lot of the other accelerators in the country that are working on this, is to get some success stories and then get the attention of the larger players.
What do you have to do to get their attention?
Well, I think to get their attention, we need to have some human data for many of these devices, and so we need results. Right. And I think on the reimbursement side, we need to be able to give some strong, support to the arguments for some of the pricing that we're projecting for some of these products. Again, this is somewhat uncharted territory for many of these devices. So I think those are the key things. It's going to work and we're going to get paid for it.
Have you had the opportunity to see some of these new technologies when they're first given to patients, to these kids, or first used on infants, and see the reaction of their families? I would just sort of be curious to what it must be like where you're championing the technology, you're trying to encourage it, and then you get to the point where actually it gets to be, used and potentially impact someone's life for the first time. What is that experience like?
So, we obviously have been doing a lot of research here, testing new things and changing standards of care and improving standards of care, and I think that's really what fuels, you know, that feeling of being able to impact lives one at a time is what fuels everything that we do.
So what's like a good day for you or a good week? Like what's something that happens where you say, wow, this thing was worth it. This was a great week or this was a great month.
I'll have to think about that a little bit. I have to tell you because, you know, often.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it more complicated than this. I just meant like what's something that makes you happy at work?
that's easier. I mean, what makes me happy at work is to be able to bring together so many different constituents within our organization to kick off a new initiative, a new product, a new pilot or research study. So, as you mentioned, you know, being able to actually get the patients engaged with technology, and then we'll see what the impact is, right? And that sometimes takes a little while until we get that data and figure out the benefit. But for me, just the ability to bring all these different parties together and working in the same direction to be able to do something new is really challenging and really very, very gratifying. And then, you know, on the other hand, we start companies, we launch companies around intellectual property that's developed here. Our first startup is actually in Lubbock, Texas. The investigators moved to Texas Tech University, and they're developing a small molecule drug for pediatric and other cancers, and they're in phase two clinical trials right now. They've had several complete remissions. We're very hopeful that this is going to be a success story for CHLA, and you know, there's nothing more gratifying than to see these successes. Now, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years. You know how long it takes to get a drug to market. So we're just starting to see really those outcomes of you know, that resulted from the fruit of our labor here. So that's very exciting.
So I know that a bunch of the big pediatric hospitals have formed an innovation alliance, and you guys have done stuff together at South by Southwest and other things. How's that alliance working? Is it easy to work across the organizations, and what is your hope to collaborate around?
That's a great question. So I think it's very unique and exciting that in the pediatric space, while there are, of course, competitive forces like in any other space, there's a lot more collaboration because we understand that the challenges cannot be really solved in isolation. And there are several collaborative efforts amongst children's hospitals that are coming together. At South by Southwest, there were eight top children's hospitals banding together to sponsor an event called Impact Pediatric Health, where eight startup companies pitched their products, medical devices and digital health solutions. Cohero Health was the winner of that. And
what do they do? What does Cohero Health do?
Cohero Health has a solution for asthma patients. So it's, you know, they have an MDI and rescue inhaler tracking, and they have the first clinical grade spirometer for use by the consumer. And so they won a $50,000 prize. And really what we want to do at this point, in fact, we're really looking at implementing this right now, is a small pilot among several children's hospitals, since Seattle Children's and Cincinnati Children's potentially joining forces with CHLA to do a pilot with this particular company. So that's one outcome of us all coming together and looking at technologies in the space that can help us. Then separately, there is a Society for Pediatric Innovation that is nascent, called the International Society for Pediatric Innovation. Dr. Anthony Chang, who is the head of innovation at Children's Hospital of Orange County, has been spearheading this effort, and that is a group of 100-plus children's hospitals around the globe with a focus on innovation coming together to help one another in our respective programs and create more opportunities for innovation in pediatrics. In January, we have our second big annual meeting in Miami. Miami Children's is hosting it. So, you know, what is possible with 100-plus children's hospitals, it really represents the market often for many of these innovations, we're going to be defining that.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that, because we were recently talking to to Diego Morales who used to be, you know, running the J&J Innovation Centers, where he had many large global innovation centers and a large organization. And, you know, his conclusion of that was that it's hard for large organizations to collaborate, especially with each other, and to get things done on the innovation front. Do you find it to be different in the pediatric world, that large hospitals can work together, that they can internally bring innovation into the operation? Or, you know, is it different than on the other side of the world?
I think that we need to come together to be able to bring these technologies in, because together we represent a large enough market for these companies developing such technologies to be successful. So I think there's intrinsically a recognition that we need to work it out and we need to work together to make this happen. Now, there's also precedent for that, and it's kind of rooted in many years of children's hospitals coming together to do multi-center clinical studies because the number of patients aren't sufficient typically with one institution. So I think there's just a culture of doing that anyway on the research side, but doing it now on the kind of implementation of innovation side is kind of just the next extension of that. Certainly, it's different players and different stakeholders within our hospitals that we need to all wrangle to make this a reality. But I think the will is there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you look around your portfolio, at CTIP and you know, across the programs you're working on, What is the most promising company? What gets you super excited to think about its prospects of growth?
There are several. I can't say that I could pick one out specifically, but I will say that there's on the drug side a great need for reformulating pediatric drugs. There's a great need for improved dosing of drugs for children, which obviously are typically not labeled for kids. You know, 90% of drugs in the NICU and the neonatal intensive care unit are used off-label, about 50% the rest of the time. So I think there's just a huge need and opportunity to innovate in that area that's going to increase, you know, improve safety and outcomes. We're working on spinning out a company that will be developing, I think, you know, Listerine breath strips, right? that form factor for pediatric drugs with different, you know, flavors, and that can dissolve in the mouth.
It'll get the kids ready for ecstasy in their college years.
No, but you know what's actually funny, Lisa? I was thinking about it because there was a medicine that was recently approved. It was essentially like, just like you're talking about, like essentially it's orally dissolvable version of some ADHD medicine. And initially the reaction that everybody had, which I had to be honest with you, was, all right, this is the lamest piece of crap like drug ever. this is like just, you know, everything that's bad about pharma companies, they're just, you know, essentially reformulating it and trying to, you know, get sales from it. And I was critical on Twitter, if you can imagine. And then this guy tweeted me or something. He goes, actually, his kid needs the medicine and can't tolerate the regular medicine, and this will be the first opportunity that his kid will have to actually benefit from the medicine that he really needs.
Yep.
So I think it's a great example of how you really need to understand the people you're trying
exactly.
to take care of, and even things that, you know, on a superficial level, oh, you're going to come up with flavor strips or whatever. It sounds, you know, less sexy than the first thing you talked about with, oh, we're going to have this, we're going to have some wire in a fetal heart and pace a fetal heart. Actually figuring out how to get medicines in a form. I mean, I can't get my kids to eat anything that's like not white pasta.
Well, I think so. It's really important because my kid, who's, you know,
older
now, still refuses to do anything that requires an injection. So getting a flu shot into her is impossible. She'd drive 100 miles for flu mist, you know?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I was so disappointed this year. Apparently the flu mist for this upcoming season is mistargeted. So they'll all have to get injections and they're not going to be very pleased.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just to your earlier point, I think, you know, and the whole concept of behavioral economics and consumer engagement, there are different kinds of consumers and they need to be taken at their, you know, where they are, right? If you're a kid, you know, putting vitamins in Flintstone form was very effective for kids who watched that cartoon.
Right, right. Wow.
So do you think about that? Is that design a big part of what you're doing? in your programs?
So that's an interesting dimension that typically our clinicians and the engineers or chemists, kind of the scientific team, doesn't necessarily think about, but the frontline staff obviously does. And I think it's absolutely critical to the adoption of many of these technologies that we're moving forward.
Can you give an example of where that's important? Can you talk about something where that translation had to be made from the scientists, to the nurses?
One of the companies that we are helping through CTIP, our accelerator, is developing a cough collector to replace sputum collection for diagnosing lower respiratory infection. They actually just landed their first seed financing for a little over $500,000, so we're really excited for them. But, they're developing a cough collector mostly for adults at this point that can't produce sputum, certainly in order to get that experience. And I don't know if you've ever, had a kid use a ventilator, a non-invasive ventilation, or had to breathe in a spirometer. Them interacting with these devices is very challenging. In fact, I had my daughter just participate in a clinical trial looking at kind of respiratory function, and she's three, and I had a very different appreciation for what our physicians have to go through in terms of collecting data from kids and having them use these kinds of devices.
For sure.
So I think absolutely, as we work with this company, for example, to design their cough collector for children, we're going to have to really think about how the child interacts with the device and how to make it less intimidating. Less claustrophobic, all of that.
Well, so another question is, twice already during this, during this discussion, you've mentioned how something involving your children informed your thinking about what you were doing at work. It sounds like both your decision to even, around your decision to join Children's Hospital LA, and then also this example with your 3-year-old in a clinical study. And I think both moms and dads who work with, who are, entrepreneurs and then they have children, I think it would be natural that their experience with their kids would inform their work. What has been your experience? Have there been examples where you saw something with your kids and then that gave you an idea for something involving your work?
Well, I would just say that whenever I have a clinical experience and a clinical encounter with my children, I just look at that experience and it always in a very different way, no matter what it is. We were in the emergency room at Children's Hospital and we were there for many hours, and you're always thinking this could be better and we should be doing things better. And I don't know that I would be looking at it with such a critical eye if I didn't have my children with me. So perhaps nothing specific jumps to mind, but I think just generally my kind of healthcare experience, I look at it and experience it through their eyes now that I have children. And I do think it inspires me to, it inspires me every day to do my job and to do it better and to make that experience better for them. And certainly, thank God we don't have any complexities to those experiences. But when there are complexities, I can only imagine how difficult that must be.
So we're nearing the end of our time, and I wanted to ask you, after all this now experience in the healthcare world, do you ever expect to go back to art, to painting, and if so, or some other form of art, what is it you'd like to create?
Going back to art, I'm sure I will in my kind of personal time. Whether that will ever intersect with my work, I am not sure. That would be really fun, though. I haven't quite thought about making that a reality yet. But I would say that in terms of what I'd like to create, as far as my overall kind of ambitions for this field, is to be able to bring some more robust financing to the world of pediatric innovation and supporting these amazing companies that are trying to make a difference in the lives of these kids while really turning a profit. And I think the opportunities are there. You know, it's a matter of finding kind of the right kinds of investors that are wanting to go on this adventure. And I know they're out there. And you know, as far as next thing to create, I think that would be it for me.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Jessica. It was great to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
Today's guest, Jessica Rousset, was speaking to us from Children's Hospital Los Angeles, where she runs the Center for Innovation. I love it.
I thought it was a very interesting show, and so interesting to think about the unique challenges involved in coming up with new products for kids, both in terms of trying to figure out what they need, and then also dealing with the problem of the perceived smaller market.
Well, it is interesting, especially when you think about people who have children, any people who have children, men, women, whatever, who are in this field. People tend to spend a lot of time and attention on their kids and think about the problems they have. At what point, when you are that person, do you say to yourself, that's nice that I have that kid and their needs are important, but I gotta go somewhere else where there's a real business opportunity?
Wow, I think it's a really interesting question. It looks like she's really trying with her with the center there to really make some inroads on that. I really hope it works out.
I do too. And I've seen, you know, folks from places like Sesame Street and Disney show an interest in the work they're doing, which is great, because I think if you think about design for kids, you know, you wrap something in a Disney princess, you got a good shot at selling it. I don't know if that works for catheters, but maybe it does. Anyways, we're excited for our next show, which will feature Dorit Donaville, who oversees the joint Baylor and NASA National Space Biomedical Research Institute.
So there, you can follow Lisa Soonan at VentureValkyrie.com, as well as on the Timmerman Report.
And you can follow David Shaywitz's writing at Forbes.
We are grateful to HealthXL for sponsoring this episode of Tectonics. HealthXL is a global enterprise that empowers leading organizations and innovators to solve major healthcare problems through digital health collaborations. This episode of Tectonics is produced by Connected Social Media and recorded in the lovely and scenic Tectonics Studio B in Mill Valley, California.
See you later.